and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program today. My guest this week, speaking to us by phone from his office in Frankfurt, is Mayor Chris McBarnes, and we'd love to have your questions for him during today's show. You can call those in to 765-496-1999, send an email to ask@wbaa.org, or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon to you. Thanks for being with us, as always.
Thanks for having me, Stan.
And I want to start out by actually thinking about spring a little bit. We've had some warmer weather recently, and that got me to thinking about something that you and I have talked about on the show a number of times, which is the golf course. And it's something that I broached with Mayor Barton about Crawfordsville's golf course. He's got a very similar situation going on there that you do. Both of you are trying to revitalize this city asset. And I wanted to ask you if this spring is particularly important to your city's golf course. You're trying to rebrand the thing, trying to get people interested in it again. Do you really need a strong spring and the word of mouth that could come with it to make those rebranding efforts successful and hopefully to make more money on the golf course?
We do, Stan. I believe the golf course is an essential piece of quality of place in our community. And as we've talked about before, I believe our golf course is a key amenity, such as a city park or even a swimming pool or downtown, in attracting young professionals to our community. We do need a strong spring. Now, the golf business is always dictated mostly by the weather to some degree, but there are some things that we can absolutely control, and that's the new form of customer service in terms of excellence that we're putting forward at our golf course. Also, to have a strong marketing model and business model at our golf course. So actually today, from 1 to 4 p.m., we're hosting a community cleanup effort at our golf course. We have rebranded our course, calling it the Frankfurt Commons. We want people to know of all backgrounds. We want them to feel welcome at our golf course. Our new management company, Oliphant Management, is world-class. We're already seeing a difference. And really, this spring and summer, we're going to focus on giving Oliphant the correct maintenance equipment, cart fleet, tools that they need to take care of our course properly. And this year in particular, Stan, we're going to focus on our greens. Because as a golfer, I know when you go to a golf course, you remember how those greens roll. You remember if they're smooth, if they're fast, or if they're slow. So we're going to take on the mantra. We're going to focus on strong marketing. We're going to focus on customer service. It's going to be a great place to reconnect with family and loved ones. And we're going to focus on those greens. We want those greens to be stellar and then work outwardly from there.
On to other things, I wanted to ask you about a sinkhole that opened up on a street earlier this week, something that I understand was taken care of relatively quickly. Is this a concern? Because you and I have talked about the aging infrastructure of your streets and how you're not quite able to pave them as fast as you might like. So what was your reaction to what happened a couple days ago?
I appreciate that question, Stan, and this is why it's so important. I have weekly department head meetings. I communicate with my department heads on a daily basis, an hourly basis, and we have a great working relationship with the utilities, and it takes a team effort to fix problems like this. This is the second sinkhole that we've had to broach here in the past year, and it all goes back to infrastructure. Sinkholes are usually caused by a source of water underneath the pavement, such as a broken pipe. That water causes the soil to wash away, creating, in essence, a void under the pavement, and eventually the pavement gives away. And when sinkholes become big, obviously they can be a hazard to drivers and pedestrians. And in this instance, we did have some utility infrastructure underneath this particular location that broke, had some water leakage, and essentially affected the pavement, making it very weak. You and I have talked about it, and I'm pushing to my utility service board right now. We have got to approach and address the aging infrastructure that's not only on top of our streets, but underneath our streets. And that's why it's so important. In cities of our size, we only do one or two major roadway projects every couple of years just because of a budgetary standpoint and the constraints that we have. But when we do these major multi-million dollar roadway projects, we need to make sure that we are budgeting and keeping our fiscal house in order as such that we can replace those water lines, those sewer lines, those sanitary lines underneath the roads so we keep these issues from happening in the future.
Have you had occasion to decide whether these two sinkholes mean you should look at look holistically at your infrastructure to see if you could identify places this might happen before it happens?
Actually, yeah, we've been doing that for the past 4 years. Our sewer department cameras lines on a monthly basis. We just had a master wastewater improvement plan completed by an engineering firm, and I know that's going that's in the hands of our utility service board. It's going to be presented to our city council. I'm pushing our utilities. I've talked to you a lot about how in the city we have fiscal plans for our department. So every year I know how to budget, where to budget, the funding mechanisms I'm looking at to make sure my departments are appropriately staffed and equipped to do the jobs that we expect of them. Our utilities need to be doing the same thing. And that includes some systematic, comprehensive approaches in replacing sanitary lines, water mains, so that we keep these issues from happening in the future. And it's so important to economic development, too. Businesses and residents, they want to come to a city that they know they can be serviced with 21st century infrastructure. So it's a monthly job of taking a comprehensive look and actually having a good plan in your hands. And we're putting steps in place to make sure that gets done.
So what happens to your budget when you've got a couple of sinkholes that you have to fix unexpectedly? We've talked about your budget being stretched, even trying to do routine maintenance, and then stuff like this crops up. What does it do to your ability to cover even the basic stuff?
You definitely got to stay on your toes with it. I mean, running a city is like running a multi-million dollar business. And what I do is I not only get quarterly management reports to show me where every single department at is in terms of spending in comparison to what's been appropriated, but I'm asking those for those fund updates almost on a weekly basis from my clerk treasurer. And at times, when you have an emergency happen, obviously we build in minor contingencies, so we have supplies line items or road repair line items that sometimes have $10,000 or $15,000 in them. Not a whole lot. This particular situation didn't cut into our budget very much. But there are times that, just like an organization, the unexpected does happen. And that's when you've got to have that great relationship working with your utilities. They work off a separate budget, obviously not driven by tax dollars, but rate dollars. You have to pool your resources there, and I have to have a good relationship with my finance committee on the city council, because if we need to go back, do additional appropriations, reshift our focus in a given year, that's just where you got to stay on your toes as a leader and make good, objective, responsible decisions.
You mentioned those being paid for with rates that are paid by utility customers. I spoke last month with Mayor Barton in Crawfordsville about his electric utility going before the state agencies that are necessary to seek a rate increase. Is this something, that these sinkholes, that would make you consider doing a similar thing to raise more money to get your infrastructure where it needs to be?
Well, obviously, just for clarity amongst our listeners, electric rates being fluctuated wouldn't have anything to do with fixing sinkholes, but I totally see where you're coming
from. No, I mean sewer rates for you rather than electric rates, which is what Mayor Barton is dealing with.
Sure. So to loop back, though, I will tell you that we will be looking at an electric rate increase in the coming year, because it's not only our sewer and sanitary issues. We also have issues in our electrical grid. Our electrical grid is obviously a key component to moving our community forward. We have not had a rate adjustment stand actually in the city of Frankfort for 20 years. It has been 20 years since we have went to the IURC and actually asked for a regulatory commission to even consider giving us a rate increase. And with inflation of cost and services, just like anything else in life, we've got to take a look at that. So I do want to give people a heads up that is coming. Our electrical grid, with what we service in Frankfort, especially having major industry, we've got to make sure that grid is very, very sound. I'm proud of the prices that we have. We're incredibly competitive when you compare our prices to Duke and Tipmont, REMC. But we're in a position now, if we want to have future industrial growth, we might need to add an electrical substation in our industrial park. But back to your original question about wastewater, yeah, that's something that we need to look at as well. I know with this master wastewater plan in hand that our city council, and I pushed this last night, I think wastewater is the issue of the day in our community. To give you an idea, right now our wastewater treatment plant is about 80% capacity. That means when Shan Sheridan and I and our economic development groups, if we bring in one more substantial industry into our community, our wastewater treatment plant will be at capacity. And I don't want us to have to be in a position to tell our local Lido, stop looking for industry because we can't handle their output on a daily basis. That's a fundamental of our community that we've got to get fixed. I challenged our council and our USB last night, if we can get this one issue solved, if we can adjust rates responsibly, justify that, and expand our wastewater treatment plant in a responsible manner, keeping the long term in mind so we can promote more economic development, we will have done very well by the people we serve.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're chatting today with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. Call in your questions. The phone number is 765-496-1999. You can also send emails to ask@WBAA.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, you mentioned last night issuing some challenges, and that was part of a State of the City address that you gave, and I wanted to talk about a couple of different things. You mentioned and your recent 200-day plan that you've put up on the city's website today talks about high tech jobs. And I think we've talked a lot on this program about manufacturing jobs. I want to hear more about your view of what sorts of high tech jobs you're hoping to find and lure to the community.
Well, I don't want to limit the types of high tech jobs. I would say the jobs out there that have to do with pharmaceutical industry, biotech, anything in the medical industry, I would love to see Frankfort dabble and get more into that realm. And a lot of people might think, you're Frankfort, there's no way. Well, you know what? I believe that we can stretch and diversify and get our economy to that standpoint. You know, I just did a rate assessment through Standard & Poor's for our bond issuance of Old Stoney, and one thing that we got dinged on was the lack of diversity in our economy being solely focused around manufacturing. So I'm challenging myself. We've got to do a better job of attracting high-paying, high-tech jobs to Frankfort that can provide great careers to people. I think one of the biggest struggles that we've faced is, Stan, in this community, and I talked about it last night, we focus so much on traditional economic development policy. We think that tax incentives and job training and infrastructure construction is the only way to lure an industry. What I focused on last night is I think we need to focus on some non-traditional approaches to economic development to strengthen our city and our citizenry. In essence, I want to work on creating a community that will attract the type of workforce, a highly educated, driven, young professional workforce that then will be followed by high-tech job creators wanting to come here not because of the large tax abatements we're giving them, but rather because they want to tap into this stellar workforce that we have. So rather than throwing money at industry, let's attract the right type of people to live here that will make our city a magnet for that industry. And some of the things I touched on was our school system, efficient, responsive government, healthy options and access to health care, and regional economic development. So our plans on the city website focuses on quality of life, quality of place, and we're going to continue to hammer through that in the next 200 days.
I got to ask you, you've used the word stellar a couple of times in our conversation already so far. Is that a deliberately chosen word for something that you might want for an economic shot in the arm to try to find a way to lure these high-tech jobs?
I'll tell you what, my friend, the governor needs to send you a check. You are great. You are a great plugger for the Stellar Communities program, and I don't blame you, Stan. It's a great program. I'll tell you what, this is what we're going to do. Within our plan, we're carrying out a downtown revitalization study right now. You and I have talked about that, focusing on our historic downtown, coming up with renderings and a vision of where we want to take our facades, what amenities we can put in our downtown, how we attract upper-story living opportunities in our downtown. I want to get that plan in place first. So we'll have that done towards the end of the year this year. I think once that's done, that will put us in a solid position to then go after something like Stellar with a game plan that has full community buy-in, that our elected officials are comfortable with, and then we can go after something like that, guns loaded, blaring, and really be competitive for it.
So you're saying you might be a year or two away from where you feel like you want to be before you can submit the most effective application the city could?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. I want to be competitive. I don't want to just go through the motions because the opportunity's there, but not be fully vetted and prepared for it because it's a huge process. Going through it, 4 years ago now, we were so blessed to be a finalist in that. But I'll tell you, it was perhaps the biggest blessing that we weren't chosen, because I don't think we were really ready. We had some momentum, we had some excitement in the air, but I think the state made a very wise decision in saying, Frankfort, go back, think about this some more, look at your funding mechanisms, get a further, more comprehensive, well-vetted, long-term plan out that's going to focus on quality of place, and then come back to us. And we've been chipping away at that, and I think at the end of this year, we'll have our comprehensive plan. It will have been updated. Our zoning codes will have been updated. Our downtown historic standards will have been updated. We'll have this downtown revitalization plan. We'll have some economic development wins under our belt. That's when I think I'll have my team ready to go after this next year. And, you know, things change in the state from year to year. So obviously we'll have to vet the program the end of this year, make sure it's still even available. We are having a gubernatorial election this year. So if a new administration comes in, they might shake things up. The program may go away. I hope that doesn't happen. But we'll assess the end of this year, and I think we'll be ready come 2017 if it's still there.
While we're on the subject of high-tech jobs and things like that, I saw where the county surveyor's office is going to start using a drone to help map some areas that it's paying attention to. And I was thinking about that as it might relate to something the city could do, because I know that maps can vary greatly in detail, sometimes even from subdivision to subdivision within a city, and that can affect things like zoning and cause headaches for the landowners there. And so I wanted to ask you about employing technology like that on the city level. Is a drone or some other sort of 21st century technology the type of thing that you're looking at to give yourself that appearance of, hey, we're trying to be on the cutting edge?
Well, I think, and you've seen from action, and I'm going to go back to our fiscal plan, we're trying to implement high-tech technology in our city departments right now. You know, just buying a 25-terabyte server and equipping every single one of our police officers with body cameras, that was a step in the right direction, that we're embracing 21st-century technology. Our fire department investing in a state-of-the-art rescue pumper and thermal imaging cameras for our firefighters to be able to detect hot spots in residential houses that could be affected by a fire, to see where that's at and then tackle it. That was moving forward. So, yeah, you and I are in lockstep there. I will tell you that our EMA director, Emergency Management Director Daryl Sanders, also applied for a grant a number of years ago and has a drone that's available to our public safety officials. So if we were looking for a child that was lost, heaven forbid a senior citizen gets confused and gets lost, any type of situation like that, we do have access to that. Also, a really neat thing that Clinton County has, we have a great GIS mapping system. So if you Google Clinton County Beacon, you can get on and you can see up-to-date parcel information, survey lines, all that information is on the web. So I applaud Dan for doing that, and we are in the city with those examples in mind, trying to be in lockstep of employing technology. And it's important when you're recruiting future employees that you do that. I know young public safety professionals that are looking to come into a department, they look at those things. They look at, okay, what is this department going to outfit me with so I can fight crime in the 21st century? So whether that be an in-car camera, a body camera, the correct equipment in regards to a taser, they look at all those things. So if we want to recruit and retain the best and brightest out there into our departments, we need to continue these efforts.
You mentioned the public safety component of that a couple of different times. And so let me kind of flip my question on its head. If you were to use the drone for a public safety reason, I could see it as being exactly what you say, a way to get into places and get the 30,000-foot view of what's going on. But there could also be the wonder of, well, Big Brother really is keeping a flying camera over my head, peering down at me all the time. How do you balance those two?
Well, obviously, I don't think that the drone would not be used in my mind sitting here unless there was a dire emergency. Obviously, to fly a drone, just to fly a drone over someone's backyard when they're barbecuing on the 4th of July, that's not right. We don't want to do that. So You know, I think to continue to communicate, if we were to have an amber alert or a silver alert of some kind, if we had somebody lost, just to communicate that through social media to let people know, listen, we might be deploying some different tactics that may be outside of the box, so understand why that is happening. And then I hope our constituency will understand that it is a dire emergency. It could be a life or death situation. And if we need to use a drone to fly over 3rd Street and the alleys to locate a person before something bad happens to them, I hope that they understand that.
We've got just a few minutes left with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes on today's Ask the Mayor here on WBAA. Email your questions to ask@WBAA.org. Call them in to 496-1999 or tweet those questions at WBAA News on Twitter. I wanted to follow up with you about something we talked about on last month's show, and it was actually something I mentioned last week with Mayor Barton when I chatted with him. You got a call on our show last month from a young woman who had said that she had heard you talking about wanting to recruit young professionals to the city, and she said, why don't you think about putting together an LGBT rights ordinance? And you said that it was one of the first notices you'd had on that issue. I was curious whether since our last show, anyone else had come up to you, either because they heard that or just because it was on their minds, and talked to you about that?
You know, in all honesty, Stan, I have not. And I consider myself a very accessible mayor. And I talked to you. I think we had over 20-some community meetings last year. I'm out and about in the community every day. We allow for public comments in our public meetings. So, no, I haven't. I have given it a lot of thought. I've prayed about it. And the more I think about it, I worry about putting legislation into effect just for the sake of putting legislation into effect. And I think, why in Frankfort should we need a new law for something that's already happening? I really want to lead by example when it comes to this. I don't accept discrimination in any form. I was raised, you love and you accept people, and there's only one individual that judges people, and that's definitely not any mayor, not any city councilor in Frankfort or anywhere across the state. I know that you mentioned there were several other communities in the state of Indiana that have put something like this into place, and I'm not saying what they've done is wrong. They know their communities. They know what the people in their communities are calling for. They know what's worrying them. They've listened to them at public meetings. They've had calls into their office. They've had letters. I don't know. I was elected to lead Frankfort, so not our state, not our nation, not other counties. Frankfort. So I'm not saying what they've done is wrong. I just know my people, and I know that the spirit of Frankfort is love and acceptance.
On to other things, I wanted to chat real quick about the two boys connected to a pipe bomb that was detonated near Clinton Central High School. Those two have now both pleaded not guilty in their initial court appearance. That, of course, is what normally happens in a first court appearance in almost any case. Do you worry about this being more than just an isolated incident in any way?
Well, you look at what's happening across our nation right now, Stan, and unfortunately, I don't think it is an isolated instance when it comes to our nation as a whole. I think people are getting online, they have access to how to make these things and how to create these terrible scenarios more than they ever have before. And I think that's why you need a very proactive, active, and trained public safety department. You know, we've tried taking steps to make our police officers more active. We're engaging in more community meetings now than ever before. I did state last night in the State of the City address that we are creating a community police advisory board in this next 200 days. It's going to have a diverse representation. They're going to have monthly meetings with the chief. We want to hear about crime issues. We want to strengthen relationships. We're having a police community meeting this Saturday. So, if there's individuals out there that are hearing people around them even joking about something like this, you need to take it seriously in our society. You need to let us know. Call us. Come to a community meeting. We want to know what's going on in your neighborhood. That allows us to better serve you. That being said, with this instance, Stan, I do want to commend the Clinton County Sheriff's Department, ATF, and even the Tippecanoe County Bomb Squad. I know that they had a crucial part in this. They were able to detonate that device. No one got injured. No students or teachers or staff were ever in danger. But it's something, unfortunately, in our society today that's becoming more common, and it's a shame.
I wanted to ask you about the communication part of it. To your knowledge, are any local schools, for instance, or other groups doing anything to try to educate especially the kids, since this has happened near schools and we've seen this in other places in the country as well, in the neighborhood of a school, either talking to them about the legalities of explosives or trying to identify kids who might have some trouble in their lives that would lead them to commit a similar act? Any sort of communication like that you're aware of in the community?
No, I can't speak for the schools. I don't know any exact training that they're deploying. I will tell you, just from what I've seen out of our school administration, they're very proactive, it seems, when it comes to things like this, addressing topics that are relevant in the 21st century. For example, I was out with my Frankfurt Future Leaders Advisory Council yesterday, and some of the kids weren't able to attend, the boys, because they were undergoing some sexual assault training that the school was putting on. And I thought that was great, that the school is being proactive. Again, unfortunately, in our society, domestic abuse, sexual assault, it's becoming far too common, and it's an absolute shame. It's a tragedy. So if I witnessed and I saw that training going on in a topic like that, I have to believe that our school board and our school administration is also thinking about some of these other things. I do know that they have engaged our police force on some active shooter training in the past. Obviously, that's something we want to be prepared for. We want to give our students and the staff of our schools and really our public buildings in general the idea of, heaven forbid, if something were to happen, here's the way you think, here's what you should do, here's who you should contact. So we're trying to be as proactive as possible when it comes to those crisis matters.
In just our last couple of minutes, I want to ask you a question or two about the city's airport. You're hoping to spend about $2 million on a new hangar and a new terminal there. And I've done some reporting on regional and municipal airports, and they are relatively hard, actually, to run in the black. Does your airport have enough traffic to justify the expenditures you're thinking about?
Well, I'll tell you what. The way I understand it is this is all being done within the current tax levy of the County City Airport. So I do not believe it's put any further burden on our citizens and our taxpayers, not only in Frankfurt but throughout the county. I'll tell you, our particular airport stand does service our industrial park. People may not realize it, but we have Lear jets coming in pretty much on a weekly basis of industry CEOs that are coming and going from different parts of the country. When I visited ConAgra's headquarters in Omaha this past year, one of the things that the vice president brought up to me is, he said, "Mayor, when are you going to get that de-icer in place? You know, we really, really worry about that in certain weather conditions that Indiana can provide." So that is a component of economic development that we have going for us, and it really does help us lure new industry to this city. I also understand that this hangar is going to be used for a public meeting space as well. There is a need in our industrial park when large conferences are going on, workplace training is going on. Sometimes industries want to get off-site, go somewhere in the community where they can have team meetings. This is going to be a public facility as well that can be able to host events. So I think it's going to modernize the airport. It will give us that extra edge when it comes to economic development. Again, I think it's us here in the city of Frankfurt embracing the 21st century and doing all we can to grow our community step by step.
Real quick, have you talked to any other communities? Your situation sounds actually very similar to what goes on in Greencastle. Their space is very similar. Have you talked with other localities that have similar airports?
You know, I personally have not. We have a 6-person airport authority board. 3 of those members are appointed by the mayor, and 3 are appointed by our county government. But I will definitely tell them that Greencastle is a spot we might want to vet and check out if they're doing some of these things. Obviously, we're in the business of plagiarizing. If another community's got something great going on, we will definitely look at it and see if we can adapt it here in the city of Frankfurt.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always. We'll do it again next month.
Hey, Stan, have a good week. And by the way, go Boilers. I hope you guys do well today against Arkansas.
Thanks very much. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for Ask the Mayor on WBAA comes from your membership and Butler, Fairman & Seifert, a civil engineering firm providing communities with professional expertise and guidance. Butler, Fairman & Seifert, civil engineering solutions for better communities. BFSENGR.com.